everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is a great guy. His name is Troy Kirby. He is the solo entrepreneur, founder, CEO, chief cook and bottle washer of Adao Sports. He's coming right now to us from a sports background, and I thought it'd be really an interesting conversation with Troy because I've spoken at one of his conferences and learned a lot about sales in the sports area and how it's implemented. But I really wanted Troy to share a lot of his stories. He's got some great ones for us in the area of sales, in the area of education, where he came from as far as what he was trained for versus what he's doing now. And just give us some idea and experience of his experiences as it relates to sales, but not necessarily, you know, diving into process. It's all about focusing on engaging people, getting people to come to events, what he does in his world in order to build his book of business. Welcome, Troy, to the podcast.
Well, Mary Lou, first of all, thank you for coming on my podcast originally. And then, also coming to my conference. If I didn't have people like you that were invested in me enough to do that, I don't think that I would be as successful. And I think that's something that as we start out this, you know, kind of conversation, it needs to really talk about how other people, when they give you their time, they give you that opportunity, they're really giving you a gift and you have to be respectful of that. And you have to, you know, be ready to give back. I think if there's one thing in sales sometimes that's infuriating, and I see it at networking events and other things, people just want to hand you business cards. Give me money. Well, you know, that's not how relationships work. That's not how people view anybody else when they want to deal with them. And when you do that, I think you shut down the idea of conversation and you shut down the idea that you're ever going to actually make a sale from it.
Well, let's expand on that because, you know, we met probably through a cold interaction. It's been a while. I can't remember how we actually connected. But obviously, I'm coming from a whole different way of life than you. But yet there was a spark there. There was something that you did on your end to engage me. And is it science that you do? Is it just who you are as a person? Are you practiced? Do you study every day on how to start these conversations? What is it about you, Troy, that allows you to start and follow through with conversations with people you don't know on a regular basis?
What I would first of all say is I've always been outgoing as a child, but, you know, and now as a grown up, one thing that actually did help me out of the blue to be able to be better at stage and really working with people I don't know was to do some stand-up comedy. I was not very funny. But it was that open mic night of getting up there a few times and actually having to make the audience care what I said and be kind of relatable to them that I think helped. I would always encourage that. If there's any type of speaking opportunity, go where you know you're going to screw up. It doesn't matter. I didn't care if I screwed up in front of a stand-up comedy, you know, crowd or whatever, because it was an open mic night and everybody was horrible. And, you know, you're going to tell groaners. The whole idea is to get practiced in the idea of relating to people. And whether or not it's digitally online, which is how, you know, initially we met, was me reaching out to you because I was looking for people outside the box for my podcast that could talk about things like prospecting, could talk about things that were really not utilized as much as they could be in the sports industry, because I have enough of an audience with my own podcast. I get about 15,000 listeners a month that are all in the sports industry. And sometimes I want to be able to feed them that spinach with the cookie. You know, sometimes I'm going to interview their friends, but I also want to interview the people that provoke them. And that to me is one of the things that I always see that at networking events where people will shuttle with their friends, the people that they already talked to anyway. And then they go, well, networking didn't work. Well, that's because you only talk to the same people you've talked to all the time. Get away from your friends for that, you know, 30 minutes and own the room. And that means going out and being, you know, fairly aggressive with everybody you talk with to make sure that you're invested in what they care about, which means listening to other people. And a lot of people won't do that. A lot of people are resistant to hearing anybody else's story. One thing I've learned, you know, over my time is I'm pretty boring when it comes to being interested in myself. I mean, I know me. You know, I'm kind of bored with me. So I'm more interested in who you are. You know, the amount of stuff that you do might be more fascinating to me because it's like kind of, you know, getting a new book or getting a new movie. You're entertaining me in a lot of ways with your, you know, stuff, and we're building a relationship that way. I want to give back to it and, you know, converse with you. But I think it also matters that you feel that somebody is actually listening to you, because people want to do business with people that listen to them, not people who talk at them.
You know, it's funny. I'm reminded of a Robert Cialdini, who way back in the dark ages used to teach his own classes in persuasion that I was allowed to go to in Phoenix. And I remember him standing up and saying, you know, the biggest mistake we make is we go into a room and we say to ourselves, who can help me? Who can help me in this room? Instead of saying, who can I help? Who can I truly add value? And like you said, engage in conversation, listen to what it is their story is, and play off of that. Now, your mic, your open mic stand-up really does train that muscle of listening and reacting and finishing, you know, yes, and finishing a sentence of someone else. Would you say you hone that over time? Or is, you know, if I were listening to this podcast thinking, I'm just cringing, thinking I'm the one who's standing on the corners or on the side of the wall, not wanting to go into the center, unless I really know the person or can anticipate how they're going to react to me. What do you say to that?
Well, number one, change your mindset. It should be a yes mentality. Anything that you can do that is not going to necessarily take your arm off, try it. Nobody, by the way, I don't know if anybody even remembers me doing stand-up comedy. I don't know if any of those people probably even glanced at it that were in the audience at that open mic, you know, those few open mics that I did. I don't care. And, you know, this is actually where I will tell you, I actually got started with the podcast. I did not get started with the podcast with one idea of saying, geez, I'd like to do a sports business podcast that talks about sales. What happened was I had a person that I met at one of those open mics who said, hey, I've got a podcast and I'm interviewing this woman and I need your help because you seem to ask good questions. And I said, well, who is this woman? And they said, the Octomom. And yes, that is the same one. But the difference was instead of asking her questions that were, I guess, dismissive of her or derogatory, you know, she was only going to give us 15 minutes. I ended up getting 45 out of her because we asked about her being a mother, things that she had done in her life that were totally sidestep. And then, you know, from that, I started going, wow, this was a great conversation. You know, what's funny about that is I had people that actually reached out to, you know, the comedian friend who were like, well, that was a, you know, that really changed my mind of her. And I don't know, I'm not here to change anybody's mind about anybody. But if you can take a person who has been annihilated by the press and, you know, change that mindset just by allowing them to talk more, I think that that's a powerful thing because it means that you invested in the conversation with them and you also treated them with equity and respect. I have nothing, you know, for or against that lady. I don't know her very well, but I do think that I have the right to treat her as a person. And, you know, too often, I think that's one of the other things sales does incorrectly. We qualify people based on how much money they have. And the thing I would say is there are plenty of times that I have met people, especially in college athletics, to where they didn't have much more than a dollar to their name, but they happened to know about 10 people that had about 100,000 to their name. You know, and that to me is one of the things that really a lot of people make mistakes on is they don't want to take investment because they see your wallet instead of maybe the fact that you might have a referral that might help them, et cetera. So, you know, coming to that, that's where I started going, wow, you know, I really want to build the conversation. I'm going to do my own podcast, you know, on sports business. And here's what ended up happening. I did one podcast with my friend, Matt Harper, who has a yes mentality and everything that I do, he says, yes, he'll be a part of it, much to his detriment. But so we recorded a 60-minute conversation. It was just about sports sales, et cetera. I threw it up, and on LinkedIn, I had an associate AD at West Virginia who reached out to me. I'd never known him a day in my life. And he goes, wow, you know, that was great, blah, blah, blah. I also had a colleague that I knew for many years who worked in Seattle around me, and called me up and said, you need to take that down. You know, that's the sports industry doesn't do that. You'll get blackballed, you know, this kind of synonymous thing. You're going to get blackballed. And, you know, that's just bad for your career. A year and a half later, he's asking me how to do his own podcast and how to be a guest on mine. Mm-hmm. And that kind of tells me as well, people don't see what they need to see until after it's already done sometimes. So when you have those moments of doubt, just remember, a lot of people who are speaking to you are speaking from their own inexperience. So if they tell you not to do something, and it really doesn't change, you know, the effect of the world, they probably don't know what they're talking about. So I would be, you know, kind of reticent to say, don't just not take chances because somebody else might not agree with you. So what? Do it. Try it. If it doesn't hurt anybody, go for it. And you know what's funny is about that podcast, it has over 850 episodes, but it's really built it over the last 5.5 years to where now I'm known as, in the sports industry, as the sales guy, the ticket sales guy. People place things on you because they hear your voice so often. They hear who you are. They kind of invest in you. And there's other things like an email blast that I've put out that, you know, has its own kind of readership because it's a newspaper. It's not just me trying to sell you on me. And I think that that's important as you, you know, move forward. Whatever the sales initiatives are, you need to take an active investment in other people. But once you take a chance on yourself and project those things, you have the opportunity to make so many more contacts and so much more money.
Yeah. And with all the tools that are out today, the social tools that allow us to become our own mini CEO of our own company, which means we're commenting on group discussions, we're creating a blog post, maybe talking about the benefits of some feature of a product, or just reaching out to your first and second level connections and asking how you can be of service. I mean, all those things, just little minor, you know, mini types of tasks that you do every day will start to build. And like you said, I mean, you're now known as the guy in sales for sports. I mean, that was built over time, but you were consistent in it. You were courageous in getting your word out there. And, you know, we all make mistakes along the way. So it's just the way it is. But the more you put yourself out there, the more authenticity you actually portray, the more people get to know you and they feel comfortable with you. I think that's one of the biggest issues I have with email and texting is that we kind of hide behind these levers of technology and we don't necessarily communicate one-to-one anymore. It's one-to-many, which doesn't work.
I think it's even beyond that is I think we have a lot of people that like to use convenient excuses. I always feel sorry for the spouses or children of some of these people that will tell you that that's why they don't do something, their spouse or they have kids or whatever. And I always think that's not their fault that, you know, you cannot find that 5 minute to 10 minute time commitment just for whatever you're doing. And using that as an excuse almost sounds like you're kind of resenting them for the fact that you would have done this stuff had they not been around. And we know that's bogus. We know that's not true. That's you being complacent. You can find the extra 5 minutes. If that means you wake up 5 minutes early, wake up 5 minutes early. I always find it, you know, really kind of disparaging that somebody would think their spouse or their children would prevent them from having that 5 to 10 minutes to do those things. And that's part of the issue is a lot of people aren't playing the long game. They play the short game. They always want to putt, and that's why they miss. Instead, they need to play the long game of being able to, you know, really knock the ball, you know, knock the cover out of the ball long before it's due. So if you're going to do like, let's say you decide you're going to do XYZ, you need to plan it out and you need to do it long term. So I have a person that I've helped. He has a wife and two kids and, you know, he didn't know where he'd find the time, but he really loves this game called floorball. So I said to him, okay, if you really want to set this up, here's how you set it up. You write all of the blog posts for a year before you even launch one. And then every time that you launch one, you replace it with, you know, an extra 5 minutes of your time. And he griped and groaned about it for about 2 months, but he got it done. And that was in May of last year in 2017. He's now already in January, the end of January, has the NHL talking to him. He already has other folks talking to him because this game of floorball is adaptive to injury recovery, Walter Reed, but also National Hockey League and their efforts of going over to China in 2022. He didn't even know that he had the potential or audience. And a lot of it became because he refused to do the time management beforehand or just didn't know it existed. But the difference was once he got on the ball, he did not use his children. He did not use his spouse as an excuse for why he wasn't doing anything. And what's amazing is that he goes, yeah, I write a blog post once a week now for 5 minutes. It's like, yeah. And it's easy once you get started, but it really, I think it affects your relationship, to also your spouse or your children, because of the fact that you're making these excuses that I think it rubs off that eventually you do start blaming them for things that really have nothing to do with them. So if you're actually, in sales and you're like, I can't get it together and blah, 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 you're not putting not only the time in, but you're not putting the time in ahead of time. If that means that you're going to invest in relationships, if that means you're going to invest in contacts, don't do it the day it's due. Don't do it 2 days before it's due. Do it 5 months before it's due. Build that contact over time. Do it in a way that actually allows you to have more time, not less time, with your family or whatever. I mean, I'm a big family first guy. I'm not married or have kids myself, but I don't, really subscribe to that idea of leveraging an excuse that really kind of ends up harming your relationship with other people simply because you didn't achieve.
Yeah, but it's also about sustaining the work. And you mentioned your friend who sought you out for advisory? Was it for coaching? Was it for accountability? What was it that kept him going? Did you need to sort of prod him on that? Or did he, as he started to get momentum, just naturally stepped up and kept going on his own?
To use an analogy, I'm the guy that puts the gun on the counter. I tell you exactly what you can do. And then if you don't achieve it, that's not on me. But I give you the really hard lesson up front and say, if you really want to achieve this, this is what you have to do. I'm always giving of other people when they want to do this. Some people have taken me up on it. Some people have not. And when they have not taken me up on it, but they have used that hour, coffee session, they end up seeing the results from other people achieving what they don't. And that does not mean that you have to charge them for that knowledge. That's not what, my deal is, but I look at it as the success shows success. And once you start to see it, and he started to have the reaction from people that were now subscribing to his automatic newsletter that always came out that he had set, a year ago. So he had set that in March or, April 4 of 2017 for now, that those blog posts or, that stuff is being released. Well, now it makes it just absolutely easy when you just update once in a while and you're not scrambling. And he had an issue, to where one of his pets died. So he had an entire 2 weeks where he was just out of commission. He didn't even worry about it because the thing was automatic and he has a full-time job, as a rec guy. But here's the thing. He's now getting enough calls and he's now getting enough interest. He's starting to look and go, wow, 2 years down the line, I might be able to take this the full breadth. The problem is that people aren't willing to take those first few steps, whether that's even as a sales business development director or not, just because they want to have, that extra time to themselves. And, I always question what people are doing. I think we're overly entertained. If you look at Netflix is putting out a ton of awesome stuff every single week. And you'll see people, even your friends, talking about how they just binge watched for 10 hours The Crown or Orange is the New Black. And my thought is, if you put that 10 hours into something else, that 10 hours that you put into your business will actually yield out probably about 20 times. Whereas that Orange is the New Black, once it's done, you're not going to watch it again, or maybe you will. But, you just kind of wasted time and you stayed up all night and whatever. But I'm not against entertainment. I just think that we are being way too soothed with the entertainment options that we have and we're not willing to, you know, do the little things. I'll give you an example of something that had kind of bugged me in the industry. You know, as a college ticket director at UC Davis back in, I think it was 2013, 2014, we really didn't have a ticket association. So if you go to NACDA, which is the Athletic Directors Association Conference, they will house every association under it. So tickets was always thrown into marketing and not viewed as different. And I would go to some of the meetings to where they would have these breakout sessions for ticket people, and there'd be about 100 people there. And I was like, why don't we have our own track, our own sessions that talk about tickets or the things that we're doing? And everyone just kind of, you know, looked at me kind of odd, whatever. So I finally asked the question of the organizers, what does it take to get a ticket association? And they said, you know, it's, you got to fill out a form and it's like $30. And they made it sound so arduous. I filled out the form. I paid the $30. And then I went around and I called as many people as I knew, you know, within the industry, and a lot that I didn't know. You know, we got it founded. They said, nobody's going to come. You know, you'll probably get 25 people. Nobody's going to sponsor. You know what? I found the sponsors. I found the relationships. And, you know, I had a good, you know, 2-3 people helping me. I don't mean to suggest like I did it all on my own, but you've got to be that aggressive person. And the first conference that we had over 100 people. And by the way, you know, they're in now year 4. They have now more money as an association from sponsorship that by far than any of the other ones that are established, even though they have only like a 12th of the attendees. And the reason why is putting that aggressive thing forward to where I'm no longer a part of that organization because I'm not in college athletics. But once you start momentum and you start that snowball, other people see it and other people want to be a part of it. And once you do that, it allows people to kind of, you know, get energized and do it. And then they're just a part of it. The same with the conference that you and I, you know, I had you at. The Sports Sales Boot Camp was one that didn't exist a few years ago. And all I did was ask the organizers for a room. They said, sure, you know, like whatever. I sold a sponsorship to it. And then I set out to make the conference that I wanted with risk mitigation of not having to pay any kind of, you know, conference, you know, hotel fees or anything else. And I made it, you know, really kind of applicable to what I thought young account reps or young professionals might want. And I got rid of the majority of the PowerPoints, which to some people was to a chagrin that they didn't have 30 PowerPoint slides and they didn't have 70 minutes or, you know, what, 700 minutes some of these people want to take, 30 minutes or less, you know, give it to me. And then guess what? There's video on the back end. Right. Once you start doing that, all of a sudden I started to have people like yourself that were willing to invest in it, but other people even in the industry that were vying to be a part of it simply because, you know, it's, they could see it at that point. But if I had not put the time in, you know, a year and a half prior to the first one launching, it wouldn't have filled up. It wouldn't have been something. You've got to do it a long time ahead. And once you do that, you're going to win.
And it's the daily commitment to the process. I mean, I think a lot of what I'm seeing now is immediate gratification is the order of the day. And a lot of times we don't have that luxury, especially in prospecting into cold accounts or people we don't know. You know, we're not going to have this instant rapport. It takes time to build relationships. It takes time to work the system so that by the time you do have that first conversation, they know a little bit about you, they know what you stand for. And yes, it's still a cold conversation, but you're warming them up with information, with content, with things that matter to them along the way. And a lot of people think you just pick up the phone and get an appointment, and that's it. That's all.
A lot of people think that you can hit a baseball out of the park, you know. And yeah. Kevin Nosek, who is a assistant basketball coach at UC Davis, said something so poignant to me once, and I repeat it all the time. He goes, you know, talent without drive is just another word for underachiever. He goes, I've met plenty of talented people. They just never really accomplished much because they didn't have the drive, you know, on that behalf. And, you know, once I heard that, I was like, you know, that does have some, you know, kind of, you know, really kind of merit. What I'll say is, with my podcast, if I died today, like I drop dead right now, people, unless they knew who I was, they would not know that I was dead via the podcast for at least 10 episodes. So that's 3 weeks. So because I've loaded up that many episodes, I always stack the amount of episodes I have, because you never know when somebody's going to drop out from a commitment. Somebody has some type of issue, whether I have an issue. It's all that preparation, and it makes it so much easier to be able to do stuff, because often there are so many people that are challenged with time because they're seeing it from what they're doing immediately, not what they're doing 5 weeks, 70 weeks from now. I'm launching my own conference in Seattle. We talked about off air. That'll be, and I talked to Amazon's PR actually today about them, you know, bringing out some stuff, and they were like, wow, you're ahead of the game. You're this far ahead, 9 months ahead. And I said, actually, you know, it's only 257 days. You know, and they were, wow. You know, like, and I said, you know, we've been looking at this since July last year, and, you know, getting everything else. You have to look at it as, when you walk into that facility, if you're selling something, that other person that's walking in doesn't know how much time it took. They only see what they see. So you have to be, you know, as ready as possible. And that comes to everything. You cannot wait to the last minute. And when you do, that's when screw ups happen. Screw ups are going to happen. I'm not saying that everything's going to be perfect, but you can mitigate the amount of screw ups if you actually, you know, kind of avoid certain things. I had screw ups, you know, everything I've ever done has had screw ups. Doesn't mean that they're not going to happen. This idea of worry work, you know, oh, I can't do it 100% perfect. Well, then what? So then it's 0% perfect if you don't launch it. So I'd just rather it to be 85% and try to shore up that last 15% that's going to happen. Plus, people don't see your mistakes as much as you think they do.
Right. My motto is and continues to be, from my friend, Aaron Ross, don't worry, be crappy. So get it out there, because your crappy is probably someone's wow, you know, because you're just further, you're always further along than somebody else on the path of success. So what you know right at this moment is a lot more than people coming on to the path. And you have to kind of keep that in mind as you, especially when you're developing intellectual property and, you know, doing blog posts, whatever it is, you know, just get out there with heart. You know, put stuff out there. People are going to comment. People are going to probably comment negatively, but it's all about starting the conversation. I mean, our whole being for prospecting is to be able to start conversations with people we don't know, or people that we're warming up that chill. So we're in that world of not everybody's going to love us. It's just, that's the way it is. And I think the more we can embrace that and go with it and get stuff out there and be real, the more fun we're going to have in our job, first of all, and the more successful we are going to be. And you overlay that with what Troy has been talking about. It's not a today task. It's planning over the long haul. It's the 1, 3, 5 year trajectory that we're looking towards. And we're just chugging away, chunking away at that goal every single day. And we'll get there. I mean, everybody knows I'm turning 60 in May. And I have a goal to do a 60-second handstand hold. Well, I did my first one last night, and I held it for 1 second, which means I have 59 seconds more to go. But it's like, it's the journey. It's getting there. I'm excited that I could even, you know, hold it for that length of time. And that's the thing. That's what keeps us going. It's that we know we're going to get there, but it's enjoying the journey for getting there, too. That's a big point.
But I would also say, Mary Lou, that you also do not act like, you know, somebody that's, you know, nearing maybe what I would call retirement. You, when you came to my conference, you were heavily active in everything. You were, you know, participating. You were sitting in the back. You were doing things with other people that was beyond what a lot of people do. You were cultivating relationships that long term may yield out. I think way too many people act like they're about to bud to retirement, you know, when they just, they show up to anything. I've had social media folks or, you know, speakers that show up to their speaking thing, and then they walk right out to get to the airport. And I'm like, whoa, you just cost yourself. And they don't understand that. They think that that should be enough. And I always think that's the entry point to somebody seeing you as a peer, somebody seeing you as somebody they want to talk to. And when you don't make yourself available, it's really killing your long game. So, you know, I think that, you know, some people get it, some people don't. But, you know, it comes to also how you cultivate. I'll give you another example of something that, you know, was kind of outside the box thinking. So at Seattle University, when I started there in 2006, that we had 16 fans coming to our men's basketball games. So our last basketball game of the year was 16 fans, meaning parents didn't even show up to support their kids.
Wow.
That's how bad it was. It was D2. We only had one guy that was buying a season ticket, and he was buying it for both men's and women's, and nobody else cared, and there were free tickets all over the place. So we took over, and, you know, I was really young at this, but I just decided I'm not going to focus on sports fans at all. And that really bothered some people, you know, to hear that. And I said, just, you know, hold off. And so what I did was, you know, because we had Seattle University at one time was one of the major Division I's in college basketball. It in 65 had more players that had more alumni who had been in the NBA at that time than any other college. It was renowned for having African-Americans play when a lot of colleges, especially in the South and, you know, on the East Coast, wouldn't. So it was really well known. It played Kentucky for the national title in a 58 and lost. Well, here's the thing. It dropped down to Division II or, you know, NAIA in like 1980. All of that stuff was gone by 2006 and nobody cared. And everyone thought that this was so ridiculous, especially when we told everyone we're going Division I. And they said, what are you talking about? There's nobody coming to your games. There's no way you're going to be at the same level as, you know, some of the other, you know, big top teams in the country. Mm-hmm. And what we did was I focused on, especially by calling our alumni folks on campus. And I said, who's coming to our campus? And they go, what do you mean? For sports? I go, no, anything but sports. And they had the crab feed. They had all these other things that were happening. And I said, okay, these people do not have a problem with us. These people like us. These people are going to the Costco breakfast every fall. Guess what? We started targeting those folks. You know what a lot of those folks said? Oh, that sounds like fun. They were buying season tickets. You know what's funny about that? Once we packed the house, all of those other people that were the diehard sports fans that wouldn't show up because we weren't the best or whatever, all of a sudden they were angry that they couldn't get in. So we'll transition that to 2.5 years later. We are, you know, at a capacity situation to where we have standing room behind both benches. Literally, they're hovering over the players as they're playing. We have a coach call a timeout halfway through the game, and we hear this moaning sound, and we're like, what the heck is that? Here's the bleachers starting to buckle because they were old wooden bleachers that had been carted in 1980 from a 1940s Jesuit high school. So it's probably dangerous. We had probably about 15 to 1600 people in the gym that capacity wise had about 1,000. We had the fire marshal that had been threatening to shut us down over it. And so we lose on a last second shot to our arch rival, Seattle Pacific. And in the back, our basketball coach, you know, gets all miffed. He says, you know, the problem with this is our players aren't used to this type of crowd or, you know, this was just, you know, too much pandemonium. So we went out and got shirts that said quiet, please. So our team can concentrate. The point is that, you know, you can build it and it surprises people. It surprised the basketball coach. It surprised everybody. And, you know, we even did that at, you know, Eastern Washington University. Nobody cared about my alma mater, Eastern Washington University, when I was a student there back in 2003. I mean, we went into tailgate. And, you know, tailgating wise, the cops would show up if you were there 2 hours beforehand and go, come back 15 minutes before the game. You know, we don't do that here. So when we came back, when I went back there in like 2008 as their ticket manager, we said, let's change the culture. And we started selling tailgate passes. Everyone said, well, why would somebody buy a tailgate pass for $30 when you can, you know, buy a regular pass, you know, just for $5? Well, they get to stay overnight. Who's going to do that? You know what's funny? We had a lot of people that suddenly wanted to do that. And everyone was worried that they were going to cause all this pandemonium and havoc. No, they treated it like a campground. They respected it. And the argument was some of these people have, you know, these RVs that are even bigger than and more expensive than your house. They're not going to mistreat it, you know, and they're adults. Well, so we get to the point where we put red turf down and we announce it, and everybody has a problem with it. Everyone suddenly becomes an interior decorator that says it's going to mismatch our track. It's going to look ugly. Now, here's the thing. Nobody gave a crap about Eastern Washington University football, even though we had won before that time. We were in ESPN. We were in the New York Times. We had Japanese TV stations coming out to cover us because we dared put red turf down. You know, the only turf that you could see from space. You know, like, you know, we'd always make these jokes that birds would see it from in the sky and not land on it because it was like a lake of fire. You know, we had fun with it. But here's the thing. Before that period, we did not have the bookstore even carry jerseys. They didn't really even, you know, like render that we were the Eagles. We were anything. After that point, it galvanized us. It galvanized us to the idea that we had imagery that if somebody else didn't like it, hey, that's my school. You don't say that. Compounded with that, our first game on red turf in 2010 was going to be against our arch rival, Montana. Montana would usually buy out our stadium. We would usually consign them tickets, and they would hold up signs that said Washington's Grizzly Stadium, because we were in Washington State and they were at Grizzly Stadium. You know, they basically owned our turf. We didn't allow them to do it in 2010. We held back, even though I had the city manager of Cheney, you know, upset at me, calling, threatening my job, which she couldn't get. But, you know, she was upset because her Montana friends couldn't get in, and this was going to cost us. We had it to where, you know, all of these Montana fans thought that somehow I, as the classified staff member, you know, who was a ticket person of one, was somehow responsible for this. Looking around the room, I remember that we had several deans in the university president that were on board with this idea of restricting tickets. We restricted these tickets to season ticket holders and donors until the last 15 days before the game was played. You know, it was funny. We had more donors invest in us, more donors actually buy tickets because of the fact that they didn't want Montana fans there. But also we had people that bought season tickets before. Before that period, we only had about 200 season tickets sold. After, you know, during that season, we had 5,000 sold. The reason why was because people had never gotten to experience our product. We never cared about what we were selling and whether or not it was to the right people. And sometimes you can sell to the wrong people simply because it sold, but it's empty calories because it sells to people that aren't going to buy again, or they're only going to buy every 2 years. You want that person that's going to invest in you. What was amazing was that when Montana actually did have the ability, all their fans to call for tickets when that on sale came public, they flooded the Montana ticket office. They flooded the NCAA office with complaints, even the conference office, and they shut down Tickets West, you know, in general. Now, before that period, we had only had about the average of 3,000 people in our stadium for a 10,000 seat stadium. So I want you to think about that for a moment. We caused it to where people became so furious that they couldn't get into a place that nobody wanted to be into. I actually won a contest for Missoulin. They had a newspaper and they called me the most hated man in Montana. They asked me what I thought of it because I actually beat out one of their despised head coaches who had left, Bobby Houck. And I said, well, you know, every time you make a Grizz fan angry, an angel gets its wings, you know? And the thing is that you have to be able to tell a story. You have to be able to, you know, sell a narrative, but you also have to believe in yourself. I had several people that, you know, I even had a few death threats, which was silly. You know, we had a guy on campus who was our detective who said, I'm tired of having conversations about you with people that are taking this way too far. You know, and those things are going to happen, but you cannot feel threatened by what you're doing. You have to take those risks. You have to be that gambler. And you know what? Sometimes you're going to fail. I failed tons of times. I have not always, you know, been the best at winning. But the thing is that I will pick myself up and I will keep going. And all of these, you know, salespeople out here who may be listening to this, think about it from that angle that, do you have an entire state that hates you? Do you have it to where they still, you know, actually they still talk about me? I feel like kind of like, you know, blessed that they care. But the thing is that perpetuated a sellout streak to a place that had never sold out their venue before on a consistent basis, to where they now have the sellout streak over, I want to say, about 10 years or 8 years, something like that. That's not just me. That's other people. I don't want that to, you know, sound like it's me. But if that continues with the goal, and continues with what you're doing, that's how you're going to win. Right. People don't win by just doing it immediately. They do by playing that long game, and you've got to play that long game. Otherwise, you're not going to win.
And be memorable, it sounds like, for you, Troy.
Be hated. Yes. You know, here's the thing is, I'll tell you is, you know, the thing is at Seattle U, I had the reputation or the nickname Captain Controversy, because I was willing to go into the mix and I didn't care. And people were like, well, this person might not think blah, blah, blah about you. And I said, this person's not really thinking about me. You know, that's the other thing that, you know, like so myopic. It's like people that think they're going to survive the apocalypse. How myopic that you think you're going to be the 1% that people, you know, that actually survive. People do not think about you long term in that sense of, wow, you know, you really did this. A lot of times they kind of have a variation of it. Some of them may have had an interaction with you, but if they had a great experience, who cares? We're launching here in my hometown of Lacey. We're launching a soccer team. It's an elite men's soccer team. And there is a controversial thing around here called the pocket gopher issue, which the EPA has closed off to where you can't build on certain, you know, parts without getting a fine, you know, because it's an endangered species. And it's become a, you know, divisive issue that everyone knows about. So, of course, we called ourselves the Lacey Pocket Gophers. And as we're launching, you know, people are like going, well, you know, geez, that's a controversial issue. You know what's funny? I'm having two mascots built right now, and every time people see them, they laugh. We're going to hand out a $42,000 fine to one of our lucky, you know, persons that, you know, comes through the gate, and we'll have a county commissioner that's agreed to relieve it. We're just going to have fun. The thing is that way too often people forget that fun matters in that experience with you. If you go in, say your insurance, and I realize that insurance salespeople, you know, have to talk about death or car accidents or whatever. If you talk about that stuff, or you talk about that kind of disenjoyment, people are going to go away from you. They're not going to buy from you. Talk about fun things. Talk about interesting things that make them want to buy from you, because, you know, it is a lot more fun to talk about, you know, the ways that you can sell insurance. I think insurance could be a lot more fun, you know, than people actually make it out to be. But instead, they make it like this Gregorian chant. And that's why people don't want to invest in it. So whether it's the Lacey Pocket Gophers or whatever, I always talk, affiliate your brand with fun. Nobody has a problem with fun. Everybody wants more fun, as we talked about with entertainment. You know, they want more fun. The last thing they want is, you know, really to think about those horrible things that might happen to them.
Exactly. Troy, this has been such a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to share these stories and hopefully give someone that incentive to, you know, just have a great time doing what you're doing. Think outside the box. Try to find alternative solutions. Don't always stick with the status quo. I mean, just the stories we've heard from you over the last few minutes talk about all the different things you did, just going around and through and circuitously solving problems and having fun while you're doing it. So I hope people take this conversation to heart thinking, you know, I'm going to change some things up. I'm going to do some things differently. And also the other message, very, very strong message, is that planning for the long term, it's not an immediate gratification. We've really got to work towards what can I do today to meet those goals that I have set for 6 months, a year plus out. Thank you so much, Troy, for being a guest on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you very much, Mary Lou. And, you know, my lesson is stop giving a crap what people think, because a lot of times they're not thinking about you. Just go do it. Try it. See what happens. And, you know, I appreciate both your friendship and the professionalism that you bring to stuff. And I've really started to become a big admirer of yours, of how you carry yourself. And I learned things from you and just how you kind of do things that make me better. And I think that that's kind of the lesson from that is we're learning from each other. And I appreciate your time as well.
Thank you. And for those of you listening, I'll put Troy's contact information, his podcast, all of those links will be on his page. So that if you want to get a hold of him and listen to him, it's a really great podcast. It's very enjoyable, and you'll learn something every time you listen, for sure. Thanks again, Troy.